Hi, this is Sean D'Souza from psychotactics.com, and today we're going to be talking to a really nice person. If you go online and you look up this person, you will find that people just adore her. They like the way she goes about stuff. She's very modest. She's very nice. She's very helpful. Who are we talking about? We're talking about Carla Sondheim. And Carla Sondheim is an exceptional artist. She's got a book that has sold thousands of copies, and we're going to find out how all that happened. What's happened to her world? You know, what was happening before and what's happening after. So, instead of me going on and on and on, let me say hello to Carla. Carla, thank you for being on this call.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Carla, let's hear a little about yourself. Where do you live? What caused you to get into what you're doing right now?
Okay. Well, I'm almost 50 years old. I'm 49, and I've had a zillion careers. I kept changing after college and doing this and that and this and that until I finally, about 10 years ago, decided what I really wanted to do was be an artist, and quit my job for probably the third time because first I did law office work, then I did editing and writing work, and then I did graphic design work, and then now finally I started to do art about 10 years ago. At the time, I was living in a small town in the middle of Colorado. I'm married to another freelance artist, and then I have two boys. And at that time, I was sort of working on my art, trying to make money doing shows and things like that. And I started teaching art at my son's elementary school and found out that I really had a knack for teaching and really a love for teaching. And so that, combined with the artwork, kind of led me to where I am now. The other thing I mentioned, the small town, is there wasn't a whole lot of ways for us to make money. And I just ended up kind of deciding that I had to commit to my art because any job I might have gotten, I could probably make more money selling prints on Etsy or something like that. So our sort of limited life circumstances also contributed to me doing what I'm doing now, in that I just, it was the best option where we were living.
Yeah, I was reading some of your blog posts going back to, I think, 2008. And you mentioned, the economy wasn't doing so well, that $30,000 a year is quite grand as an income. Do you remember that?
Yeah, right. Well, I think we moved to this small town thinking our cost of living would be quite a lot smaller. And being, kind of not the best at money, I think we definitely misjudged that. And so we had to make more than that just to break even, and we couldn't. So we got ourselves into a bit of a difficult situation because of that.
Okay. Now, you moved from whatever job you had to this, what most mothers would say, don't do this. Don't don't throw away your job and do something fuzzy like art or drama or something like that. How did you feel?
Oh, well, it was my idea. And I mean, of course, my husband was right there with me, or we wouldn't have done it. But I've always been a little bit impulsive that way. And I just was very, very unhappy working full time for someone else. I couldn't seem to find my feet in a corporate environment. I just have always followed my heart in terms of my jobs. That's why I kind of changed so many times. It's like I did something, it didn't feel right. I changed something, it felt a little bit better, but still not quite right. So I changed something again. So that was the impetus behind quitting the job, is it just wasn't feeling right. It didn't feel like the right thing for me to be doing. Also, I had a young son at the time. I had two sons. One was 11 and the other one was 4. And I had basically worked full time the whole time my youngest was alive, and I just felt this strong need to lighten my schedule a little bit so that I can spend more time with him.
So how scary was it?
Pretty scary, except for that I had been kind of hustling as a freelancer on and off for, many years by that time. And so I knew that I could get some graphic design work. And then my husband, who had previously been working about three-quarter time in order to take care of our son, you know, he flipped up to full time. And so, you know, we just made it work. And I remember when I went in to quit, my boss, he just looked at me his mouth dropped to the floor, and he said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I don't know, but I just had to do it, you know." I didn't know what was going to happen, but I had to have faith and just step away from the thing that was making me unhappy.
Yeah. Well, this conversation, I mean, you know, has been so interesting because so many people have this burning desire to do something other than what they're doing, and they never seem to be able to step out and do it.
Right.
So it was, you know, once you started speaking about it, it was very interesting for me to go down that path. Mm. Now tell me, you said, you know, you're today known as an artist, but you said that you stopped drawing in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I think I don't want to, I had some experiences with teachers and other things that were quite discouraging. And I was a very sensitive young girl. And, one of my teachers, kind of made an unfortunate remark about one of my drawings that I was working really hard on. And it just kind of devastated me. And I had thought it was really good. That was the thing. I was working on this piece that I was going to enter in a poster contest. And I was just so happy with myself and so excited, thinking that I was going to win. And I was pouring all my time into it. And I got this disparaging remark from a teacher who probably didn't mean to, you know, stop me in my tracks. But, and when she said that, I realized that she was right. It wasn't that good. I wasn't probably going to win. What the heck was I doing? How stupid of me. And I know that seems like it's a little bit, simplified. I'm sure there were many other things that went into that story, but I have to say that until that time, I was totally confident in my art. And then after that time, I was completely, it's sort of like this person had given me this reality check that I didn't really need to have. because it had the effect of just, making me curl up and die in terms of, expressing myself with drawing.
You remember that statement, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. Would you want to share that with us or not?
She said, "Oh, do you think this is so good?"
Okay. Okay. And that just stopped you in your tracks. So how long did it take for you to get back, you know, to get back on the horse again, as it were?
Yeah. I should also say that, you know, I graduated from high school in 1981. And at the time, well, I certainly didn't have any mentors in my life that were making their living as an artist. And I was getting the strong sort of suggestion from all the adults around me that I needed to do something more serious, such as, you know, I don't know, go into law or something like that. So those are also some of the reasons I kind of gave up. However, I kind of think that, you know, you are who you are, and I've been a creative person all my life. I spent a lot of my childhood drawing, painting, making Barbie clothes to sell. You know, I've been an entrepreneur all my life, really, too. And I think that, you know, as I was moving through my 20s into my 30s, you know, I just couldn't help to come back to it, because it's sort of such a deep and important part of me. But it did take me a while to get over the shame of of not being as good as I should be, or not being, you know, able to draw as well. You know, here I was 28 years old and I couldn't draw. Well, obviously I had stopped drawing all that time. And so I probably wasn't going to be very good. It's sort of like learning Spanish as a young child and then leaving the country, you know, leaving the language for 10 years or 15 years and then expecting you to be fluent. You just can't do that.
Yeah. And that's a very good analogy, by the way, because that's, you know, like you, I teach courses as well, but mine's in cartooning. And, you know, all kids below the age of 5 can draw, and they just lose it after that, and they lose it like they lose a language.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, but the wonderful thing is, it's deep down inside, just like a language, you know, when... well, my son, for example, was born in Sweden and spent the first year of his life listening to the Swedish. And he's kind of grown up with this really, like, unique propensity for language and learning new languages and everything. So there's lots that goes on early in your life that are it's still there. It's just a matter of trying to tap it back out, you know.
Yeah. That's what they say about education. It's not learning. It's finding what's within you already. So that's actually,
I like that.
Yeah, it's the Latin word for education. It comes from educare, which means to reveal what is within.
Right.
So
I like that a lot. Yes.
Yeah, I liked it too. So fast forward to you start doing stuff, you know, you start doing these illustrations and stuff. What were the early years like?
They were hard. You know, they're still hard, but for different reasons. I think in some ways life is hard. when I was working at a company, it was hard for me. And then as you work as a freelancer and you don't know how to pay your next mortgage, that's hard. You know, there's any choice you make is going to have some down, you know, some pitfalls or some things that are more difficult. I think it was... I was really lucky in that I had started out doing a series of faces and then these girls that were actually really popular and people liked them. So that's always a really good thing is when you start out to have people give you positive feedback, you know, it helps to build your confidence. Mm-hmm. And so that part of it was good. I did, even though we were in this small town and didn't have any money, and we really didn't, I did have time. And so I had more time than money. And so I did spend that time working on my art and then teaching and developing that as well. So, you know, I would say that the financial struggle was the hardest, but I don't know that it was any harder than, you know, being working at a company and feeling like I couldn't, you know, move in a direction that was fulfilling to me personally, you know, even though I had a paycheck.
Correct.
Then,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. I
so,
know.
You know, I think every single situation in life, you know, you have good passages where things seem to be pretty smooth, but then it changes again and you have to rethink it. So it's all good and it's all scary.
Yeah. So you have this book, The Drawing Lab, and it's done remarkably well. But before we go into it, tell us the run up to this book. How did you get started on this book? What was the run up before this book project started?
Okay. Well, I was spending my time, you know, for the last 10 years trying to be an artist. So I did that in various ways. I had work in galleries. I was doing the art show circuit. And at the same time, I was also teaching my son's elementary school classrooms, which eventually one year turned into a part-time position. And it was paid. So I had this kind of unique childlike style to begin with, you know, kind of a cartoony sort of light style. And then I was also teaching kids. And I realized that the only way I had even come to the point that I had, in the past, few years was that I had kept drawing fun for myself. When it was getting hard or I was having bad days, I would just not draw. And it kind of went against what everybody else says, that you're supposed to push through and be disciplined and you draw every day. You can't get better unless you draw every day. And I didn't do it that way. I kept it fun for myself. And so then when I started teaching kids, I realized also at the same time that I needed to keep it fun for them. Otherwise they wouldn't, they would melt into chaos, and everything. So I was at the same, keeping the drawing fun for myself, keeping it fun for the kids for about 3 years. And then I was asked to start teaching adults. And for some reason I decided to just teach the adults this exact same way I was teaching the children. And part of my idea was most of us stopped drawing as children. So why not kind of go back and pick up where we left off?
Correct.
Now that doesn't mean I was dumbing anything down. It's just that we were doing like serious drawing exercises or, real stuff, but we were drawing stuffed animals and toys and things that were interesting to the kids, rather than a sphere or a cone or something that didn't have any personal relationship with them. And so then the same thing with the adults. I would just bring in those stuffed animals, toys, knickknacks, things that they might have around their house as collections, dolls, things that were more personal, and start drawing those things. And I mean, that was, just one of the ways I made it more fun. And what was so wonderful is the adults really responded wonderfully to it. And so then that eventually led to the contract to write the book.
So how did that happen? Did someone just show up? Did you go somewhere and ask someone?
Uh-huh. I had been teaching at various mixed media retreats in the U.S. And so I was teaching about 6 or 7 a year. And a lot of my colleagues had started writing books with these two publishing companies in particular. And so through, over time, I would get invited to be in one book or the other. And so eventually one of the editors kind of, just wrote and said, if you ever have an idea, I'd be interested. And so then, months later, I wrote and I said, I have an idea. And they said, oh, we don't do drawing books. And I go, well, this is, I said, this isn't the traditional drawing book, please, work with me. And so they did, they took a risk. And so here we are.
Okay. And you've sold what? When I last heard, it was over 30,000 copies.
Yes, the last I've heard, which was about a month ago, it was 45,000.
Okay, and what have you done? How do these copies, most book authors would go 45,000 copies. What did you do? How many promotion tours did you do? What kind of publicity did you do? What did you do?
What did I do? Well, I did a couple of things. I had just moved to Seattle when the book came out, and we were... we had finally sort of rallied ourselves enough to be able to move to a city, which has turned out to be a very wonderful transition for us. But again, I had not quite settled into as to what I was doing here and on a day-to-day basis. And so I had time when the book came out to do a month-long sort of blog extravaganza thing. And I had all the contributors of the book, doing interviews with them and then showing their work and then sending my readers to their blogs to maybe win a copy of the book. And then they would, of course, send the readers back to my blog and stuff like that. So that's one thing I did. I gave away a lot of books out of my own pocket. And I just figured it was a really good investment to do it. Later, I didn't know that I would get reimbursed, but later the publishing company sent me like 20 books. So I ended up only having to pay for the postage. But I think it just was really important to me to get them out there and to create some kind of, excitement. The other thing I did is I decided to hold an online class. And my hope was that if I kept the online class, sort of inexpensive enough, I would get a lot of people to sign up. And then and then hopefully they would buy my book. And so that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. I held this online class, and because of that, they kind of liked the class, and my book was on the website and everything. And so I had a lot of pre-sales at Amazon, and then that sort of, there was all this, movement at the publishing company, like, why are we selling so many books of what is the author doing? And I was kind of insulted, like, well, maybe it's a really good idea. maybe it's a good book. Maybe it looks like a good book. But I mean, I was doing some things, but I do think it was also just, it was hitting striking a chord that maybe, there's not a lot of drawing books out there that are approachable. And since I have kind of a simple style, I think it's more approachable that way. So I did do some things, but then I also think that the book sold itself, which I'm really, really happy about.
So what did you discover about yourself when you were creating the book?
Well, I find writing very, very difficult, and I'm really, really trying to apply my own ideas about drawing to my writing practice, and trying to find ways to make writing fun and everything, because I really, really, really struggled with that part of it. It was, I don't consider myself a writer. I felt terrible shame that my sentences seemed so, I write kind of like I talk, in sort of a conversational way. And I just wasn't comfortable with my voice, especially during the first book. So I learned that writing was hard, and that I needed to really look at how I approach it. I think I was really happy. I mean, I wasn't, I'm not 100% happy with the book. I mean, there's always like projects or chapters or something that you wish you'd had more time, or that you could have, been a little bit more clear thinking that day when you were making the final decision on that. But I really learned, and I've learned this all along in my publishing experience and other jobs, that, you do the very best you can until you have to stop, and then you have to let go and move on. And so, that book was a good lesson in that. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. I learned that I really love publishing. I was yearbook editor in my high school, and I've been sort of involved with publishing ever since my 20s. So, I'm really kind of in my element in that way. Mm-hmm. It's just another way for me to teach, which I really love to do that too. So, lots of really, really good things. And I've been very, very grateful for the positive responses that have come.
So, when you draw a lot, right? I mean, how much do you draw every day now?
I don't even draw every day. I probably can whip out a little animal a day, or, every other day. I go to live drawing classes on an infrequent but regular basis, and I'm always trying to get there more often. I would say I draw, though, at this time, probably less than 10 hours a week. Part of that is my job is mostly computer related. Like right before you called, I was setting up the blog for the next online class. And mm-hmm. So there's just so much computer work to do. It's always hard to find studio time. So, but I also have my drawing desk right behind my computer desk. So I often will just turn right around, spin my chair around. And so it's a very organic thing. So it's hard to estimate, but I always could draw more. Yep. And if I don't draw, I mean, when I go to live drawing and I've been rusty for a while, I'm always so sad that I've wasted so much time. But you do what you can, you do the best you can, and you just have to, it's like life. You have to accept yourself for where you are that day and do your best to move forward.
You mentioned, and this is what a lot of good artists know, or good, creative people know, but a lot of other people don't understand, is that having your materials ready, having the books, having the stuff ready, you mentioned you just spin around and you go to the other side. Can you Right. talk a bit about that?
Well, one thing, right now my office is complete chaos because Well, I'm not, I wish I were a little neater, but one thing I would say is I wish people wouldn't be so worried about whether they have the right supplies or not. I'm looking at the thing that I'm doodling with is a black ballpoint pen, a regular cheap ballpoint pen, and then also the other pencil that I always pick up is just this cheap mechanical pencil that is actually a throwaway. You can't even refill it. and for me, keeping the supplies not precious is really important. I get this, you know, kind of reams of this cardstock that's thick. It's just white paper, typing paper, but it's thicker and it's not expensive. And I do a lot of my just sort of messing around drawing on that. And it works because nothing is precious. Nothing's expensive. You know, I can truly just recycle a piece of paper if I make a bad mark and everything. So I think that's important. It's not to overthink that. And, yeah, I mean, honestly, you could sit in a coffee house with a little sketchbook and a pencil and it can be enough. You don't need a lot of space to create, but it is nice to have a dedicated space so that, you know, the piles can happen and that creative part of you can not be burdened with having to clean up after each one and stuff like that. So yeah. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, well, part of it was just, you know, that a lot of people have their books away and their paints away and their pencils away, and then it's such an effort to just open everything. I mean,
exactly.
Do you have that problem? You know, I've had situations where I've had, you know, nice books like maybe a Moleskine or whatever, because I do a lot of watercolors, and it's somewhere else. It's not in my bag with me at all times, or it's not on my desk open there waiting for me to work with it. Do you have that kind of thing?
Yes, I try to keep something in my purse at all times. And I have a 17-year-old son who's just a wonderful example of this. And he wears jeans, and in his left pocket is his Moleskine, which he pulls out, I don't know, 30 times a day to write a little note or to do a drawing. And it's right there. It's a little, it's slightly dorky to have, you know, this bulky book in your jeans pocket, but it's worth it to him, you know, to carry it around. And he's been doing that for 4 years, and it's just, it's just wonderful. So I definitely agree, you know, find a place where you can keep these things out. You know, I even have a little book by the side of my bed, and sometimes I'll draw at night, right? You know, I'll kind of think, oh, I didn't do any drawing today, you know, and so then I'll do a quick little drawing right in bed, and that's one of the exercises is in the book.
And how does that make you feel as soon as you've done that drawing?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's just such a silly thing that it gives me so much pleasure, but it really, really does. I mean, drawing, especially lately, I've been drawing these sort of blobby little creatures that are not, they're imaginary, and they're, you know, it's mostly about the personality rather than what they are or anything like that. And I just derive so much pleasure from doing it. And I'm not saying that there aren't times when I'm frustrated drawing, because especially when I'm in a life drawing class and I'm having a bad day and things just aren't working well, you know, it can be very frustrating, but that's just how anything good in life is. You know, you have good days and bad days, and there's frustrating times and not. And most often when it's frustrating, it's just time to put the pencil down or totally flip yourself around and just, that happened at Life Drawing the other day. I was having kind of a hard time, and so I just started doing blind contours of the figure instead of trying to do realistic drawings, and it was a wonderful afternoon. So it changed from being a very frustrating, difficult afternoon to a wonderful afternoon, and that's important to me, is to, you know, I have plenty of things in my life I don't necessarily like to do. And so with the drawing, I want to keep it something that I like to do.
Now, I noticed that you have these crazy characters, like, you know, you've got animals with tape, and you recently started doing Scribbly Dog, which I assume is one of those things. I mean, I love Scribbly Dog. I like the name. I like the way it looks. How do you come up with these characters?
Well, I have little tricks. And in a way, that's what my first book was about, was sort of when you give somebody a blank piece of paper and tell them to draw a dog, all these things, you know, oh my gosh, I don't know how back legs look. I don't know this. I don't know that. And you start to get really frozen, or you can. So over the years, I'm the same way. And so I have these little tricks that I give myself. And that particular trick, I've written another book that's coming out in about a month called Drawing and Painting Imaginary Animals. Mm-hmm. And that trick was to start with an eye. So my idea was to keep my hand very loose and scribbly and start with an eye and then see where it took me. And the one that you're talking about was a drawing I did after I had already done maybe 30 kind of smaller ones, you know what I mean? So that one flowed effortlessly out of me, partly because, just like Spanish, I had, you know, now read that word 30 times and heard it 30 times, and so it sort of flowed out of me more effortlessly. But in the beginning, when I first was messing around, I didn't know that I was going to end up with a dog character or anything. I just started with an eye and kind of let what was happening on paper inform my next marks. And I just kept doing that until I got something I liked. And then I would set that aside and start with an eye on the next one, and working very fast, doing these scribbly animals.
Yep. Now, can you talk a bit about that speed? Because a lot of people just labor over their drawings, labor over their work.
Yeah. I did not go to art school. I was a history major, and so I didn't necessarily learn how to do everything the right way. But I did spend a lot of time, once I started wanting to draw again, reading books and learning, you know, and I went to a lot of life drawing classes and everything. And one of the things that the books and the classes really emphasized were quick gesture drawings. And you're just trying to get the essence of it. You're trying to not, you know, let your mind and your hand start working together on a more intuitive level rather than a, you know, thought level. And so in all my classes, that's basically the first things I'm having them do, is just these, you know, I might have them draw with their left hand a quick sketch of their neighbor, and they have no time, nor do they have, you know, I mean, they're laughing the whole time and apologizing, but in the end, they like their left-handed drawings better than the right-handed ones, which I have them do right after that. I think there's just many, many wonderful ways to approach drawing, and every way can inform the other. So my quick sketchy drawings, I think, breathe life into the times when I slow down and are more slow and labored. And then, of course, the labored slow times are sort of informing the more gestural work. So I'm constantly going back and forth between all different kinds of, you know, speeds or little tricks to get me moving and to approach it and look at things different ways.
Talking about moving, is there a time when you get stuck?
Oh, yes. in fact, it happened just a few weeks ago. I realized that I had not seemed to create anything new for several weeks, and I was starting to, you know, you always panic, like, oh my gosh. But I've gone through this now so many times. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you're married a long time or in a relationship with a long time, you kind of know not to go down this road, because, you know, some certain silly road, because you know that it will turn out all right in the end. And that's how I feel about my bad times now. For the most part, I can accept them pretty well. During those times, I go to the library. I look at a lot of books. I don't force it. I go for a lot of walks. I watch a Korean TV show. you know, I just kind of maybe fill the cup with other things. And then, so anyway, I think I mentioned it on my blog a few just a few weeks ago that I was having this block. And then just a week or two later, I did this whole series of tape dogs that you mentioned, or tape animals that you mentioned as well. So, you know, it was kind of like the calm before the storm. And you just have to trust that you will, you know, it will come back and not to force it. That's how I feel.
Yeah. I find personally, you know, for instance, we went on vacation, we came back, and I didn't do a lot while I was on vacation. When I came back, I was like stuck and I was almost afraid to open my book.
Yeah.
And you get that feeling where you're almost afraid to open it because you're afraid, you know, you haven't done stuff for so long that I don't know. It's just weird.
And, yes.
And then what I try to do is do something really simple so that I can't get it wrong in a way.
Right.
is that something that you do or...
Uh-huh. Yes. And for example, as I was waiting for you to call, I had a blank piece of paper here and I was, you know, a little bit nervous and I thought maybe doodling would help. And so I started doodling some flowers. And then I remembered this earlier sketch I'd done where the flowers was sort of the turtle, like a turtle shell, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like doodling like these quick doodly flowers and then putting a little head and tail on it. Like that was so simple, but it got me started. You know what I mean? Or even just scribbling. One of my exercises that I have people do is just scribble all over the page like a 2-year-old. And then I move them right into scribbling with intention from something from life. But, you know, I think it's really important to give yourself little baby steps, and to be gentle with yourself, you know. It's kind of like getting on a bicycle after not riding for a long time. You know deep down you can do it, but you're just a little scared. And so you need to be gentle with yourself and not take yourself up some giant hill that first day, you know.
and then it's like madness. Then you know, it's almost like you've been released from prison and you just want to, you know, draw everything in sight.
I know. It's amazing. I just love... I love making and drawing. I mean, I read Van Gogh's Dear Theo book, his letters to his brother, and one of his quotes, I'll probably paraphrase it, but he said, it remains to be seen whether art has any use or beauty, but what's to be done? And that's how I feel so much too, that like, it seems like such a, you know, I know that there's a notion around that it's sort of a waste of time or there's no reason for it. And yet it's sort of the way I experience life and my relationships is through drawing. And I think other people find that with sports and other people find that with meditation and other people find that with, you know, cooking. And, you know, we all have our thing to help us sort of get through life. And drawing is the thing that does it for me.
Okay. Switching tracks a bit. Tell us a bit about your online classes.
Okay. Well, I started out in 2010, right before my book came out, I had the idea to do a class called The Art of Silliness. And it was basically taking my drawing lab book, which hadn't even been released yet, and taking it one step further and presenting drawing exercises in a worksheet format. In the U.S., at least when I was growing up, we used to get all these worksheets. And as a little girl, I loved them. You know, they just were really fun. And so I thought that would be a really non-threatening way. And you talked about a simple exercise. You know, one concept basically per day for 30 days. And I thought it would be a non-threatening way for people to approach drawing. It turned out it was really... well received. So I did another one and then a third session. And at that time I realized that, my youngest son was about ready to leave. He only has one more year of high school and it was doing well enough financially for me that I flipped from teaching mostly live to teaching mostly online now. And so then once it became, you know, something that was a viable income stream, my husband got on board. And so now we're doing, you know, he's a photographer. So we're adding videos and everything. So I have about I shouldn't know this off the top of my head, but I think I have about 12 classes, well, 10 to 12 that I've done, 5 silly classes, silly in Spanish, which one of my students from Spain translated a whole session for me. And I paid her, but that was just awesome. I have, you know, a faces class and a flower painting class, and, you know, and so I come up with maybe 2 new classes a year, that I'm trying to add to my sort of backlog. And, it's fun. It's stressful and fun, just like everything. I have to videotape tonight, and I'm really camera shy. So,
yeah, but when you do 500 of those, you get used to it. You had offline classes too. Tell us a bit about them, even though you don't do them so often anymore or at all.
No, I do them. I'm going to be teaching in Colorado in October, and I do miss it. And I plan, once Wes graduates from high school, to bump that up a little bit more. But I actually love having larger classes, like at least, you know, 15 to 20 people. I keep you busy right off the bat. I mean, a lot of people have different scary feelings about drawing, and so I don't talk a lot in the beginning. I just give them the pen and make them go. And I provide all the supplies, or not all, but most of the supplies, especially in the beginning, so that there's just, it's kind of like, you know, when I said that that's how I taught, you know, I taught the adults how I taught kids, that's what I mean. I basically just, you know, am not really giving them a choice. They're going to spend the first hour and a half drawing about 30 drawings, and they didn't even know that they had it in them. And I would say that first hour is just magic. We go from, you know, people not feeling confident at all to just, I mean, you know, completely breaking through some of the fears and barriers, because even though they're quick drawings and they're not meant to be perfect, and I'm giving them all these limitations that keep the drawings from being perfect, such as we work in pen the whole time. There's no neat way that you can erase your line. So you have to sort of accept that you're going to make a wrong line and it's not going to be a perfect drawing. And there's a lot of freedom in that. So, you know, that's one limitation. Another limitation might be that I have them do a drawing with one line only. They can't lift their pen. And so then that means there's, you know, the right side of your brain is working on these creative solutions on how to add eyes onto an elephant if you can't lift, you know, your pen. And so you end up with all these drawings at the end of my first hour and a half that, one, you never would have thought of to do on your own. And they're a lot more charming than you ever thought you could do. Because if I have you draw a stuffed animal and don't let you look at the paper, the eyes are going to end up in a funny place. And wouldn't you know, it's a lot cuter that way. You know what I mean? So my workshops are usually day-long workshops, and the morning is spent a lot of time drawing, and then we spend a lot of time looking at everyone else's drawings. And again, I never make anyone put out things that if they don't want to, but I don't think I've ever had a student not put out their drawings. They might hold one or two back that they are didn't like, but by that time, they all understand that it's kind of, I keep going back to the language metaphor, but, you know, it's just back to, those first words you're saying, you're not going to say them correctly, but they're still so cute. I have a grandson who's 10 months old, and he's starting to jabber and talk, and we think he might be saying dada, and it, you know, it's kind of in his little voice. It's not perfect. And it's just so adorable. And that is how your drawings are when, you know, you can just let yourself go and have fun with it. Then in most of my workshops, the afternoon, we'll get you through all the drawing hump. And then there's usually some kind of painting assignment, you know, demos and things. And then a project that I'll set you to work on. And then the afternoons are always much less structured and more free. And, you know, I go around from table to table and help people through little humps and stuff like that. So I'm on my feet the whole time. I love it.
So most people have this idea that because, you know, you're an artist, you don't feel intimidated if you go into a life drawing class, for instance. Do you?
Oh, I do. Of course I do. Well, for one thing, there's always somebody better than you. In fact, there's always half the room that's better than you. And you have to get over yourself because, you know, I mean, you just... Yes, of course I do. So there's always that comparing with other people. Of course, now that I've been doing this for 20 years, it's less and less and less that I compare myself to other people or that I am, you know, worried about this or that. You know, in the beginning, you're just completely feeling like everybody's looking at you and they're laughing at you and all this stuff. And probably the truth is they're not really even noticing you. I always tell this story with live drawing. I was in a class about a year ago, and it was at Gage Academy in Seattle, which is very academic and lots of really wonderful draftsmen there. And so I was in there being quite intimidated, but kind of holding my own with my own style and everything. And the guy that I liked his work the best, I mean, he was just fantastic. He could get a likeness. It was beautiful. It was fresh. It was lively. It was all these things that I like, you know. And he worked really large, and it was just absolutely beautiful. And we were on break, and I came back, and I heard him tell a friend, "Yeah, I really wish I could have gotten a better likeness." Yeah. And it just kind of underscored for me that no matter how good you get, you can always strive to get better, and you always do. And here he was, in my view, the very most successful in the class, and he still was trying to be better. It's just one of those paradoxes of life. I think it's a human nature thing, and it's a good thing. We're always trying to improve, you know? But you have to also accept who you are with love and grace, too. So it's sort of, you know, you have these two balls in the air all the time.
But there's also this factor of confidence, isn't there? I mean, sometimes you'll see your students, and they're drawing so well. And it's not that you know, it's almost like they don't know that they're good.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they really, I mean, that breaks my heart so much, because I have had students who, they really are doing fantastic stuff, but because they've been told either directly or indirectly, or somehow they have this idea that, you know, they have to draw like Norman Rockwell, but here their drawings are coming out, you know, quite different, then it's wrong or bad, but it isn't. It's them. It's coming from their heart and their life experience and their hand and whatever, you know, physical issues might be going into it. There's so many things that go into a person's drawing. And if you just draw from the heart, it will be sincere and it will be beautiful. I mean, there's always something wonderful in just about every drawing I see. And it is hard to communicate that, but I do kind of tend to be a broken record in my classes. So they keep hearing it over and over and me telling other people and, you know, and so it starts to break down those fears a little bit. But yeah, the confidence is definitely, I mean, I also struggled with it more when I was first starting out, but it can be debilitating. And I feel for everybody, but I like that people have stuck with me long enough to trust me, you know, and usually we can get to them to a point where they do see that the drawings they're making, even though they're not perfectly realistic or perfectly this or that, are really beautiful, you know. I mean, just think of a child's drawing and how wonderful children's drawings are, and they're just full of emotion and life. And if you can just tap into that ability to just do, yeah, you know, you're a wonderful human being. It will come out. It can't help but come out.
Because children don't understand, right? I mean, for a child, I remember, you know, my niece Marsha, she was about 6 years old, and I told her, you know, one day you'll be an artist. And she said, "But I am an artist."
Yes.
And she was very confused. I mean,
yeah.
there is no doubt in her mind. What I tend to do with some of the students, I mean, many of the students, is because drawing tends to be more of an introvertish kind of activity. You know, you draw for yourself mostly. It's you don't really care if anybody looks at it in a way. I often get them to go to a cafe and tell them to be a little more extrovert-like and not hide their books and, you know, put their shoulders so no one can see their stuff, but kind of expose it a bit. And a lot of people will come up to you and say, are you a professional artist? And the first time you go, no, they're just kidding, right?
Yeah, yeah.
After 20 times you go, well, maybe there is something here.
Yeah, right.
And the other thing is, if you never want to go to the cafe or whatever, you just, I get them to post it on Facebook.
And, yeah.
And they get people from nurseries, you know, someone who they were in kindergarten with and showing up and saying, wow, I've been following you for like a year watching your progress. And it's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that does bring up, I'm losing my thought. What was it? What was you were talking about? Ah, yeah. What were you just talking about?
Yeah,
the confidence drawing. Oh, yes. That's why classes are so wonderful because, you go into a classroom and, in one of my classes, for example, and it could be online or live, and, you're all by yourself and you're drawing something and you're thinking, this is like dumb, this is stupid. But then you look, you put it up with everyone else, or you walk around the room and you realize that everybody's looks the same because Carla made them draw it with their left hand.
Correct.
And so you realize that your thing isn't that dumb or stupid after all, that actually it's either right in there with everyone else, or maybe a little better, or maybe worse. You know, I'm always talking about, you know, you need to find the things that you resonate with in terms of materials and things like that. And so I found that classes and being out there and getting feedback were really helpful for me in sort of developing who I am, because it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not really developing this realistic part of me as much, but I have, you know, I have this other part of me that I really like. And then you know what I mean? So yes, I do think getting out there, and it doesn't have to be necessarily in public. I mean, it could be just like in an online class where, you know, you very shyly put up your first image and then, you know, everybody's really nice about it. And you're like, oh, okay, that wasn't so bad. And then you keep going and you look at other people's work and you can compare it to yours and in a good way, in the most positive way, and say, oh, I like what they did here. I'm going to try that. And, you know, and there's, so I do think other people, and it's just this, when I said that about living my life through drawing, I just feel like that's the same. It's the same lesson over and over again. I mean, you know, living all by yourself for most of us is not the right path. You know, we need other people to shape us and to love and to react against and to react with and all these things. And I think with drawing, it's the same thing. It's not it's not totally solitary at all. That's why I have a blog. I love to share my stuff, you know.
and the students need to copy. I mean, they went to school and people told them it's bad to copy.
I think so. I think people should copy as much as they want. As long as they don't sell it as their own, that's fine. Yes, I really think so. I met with an illustrator, a wonderful artist, way back. And I just, one of my regrets is not making the effort to kind of take lessons from him. But I did meet with him one day, and his advice to me was to, if I wanted to draw faces, was to trace Michelangelo's faces. And he said, I mean, trace them, not even copy, but trace them. And he said, because my mind would remember, you know, when I went off with my own piece, my mind would remember. And it was such a powerful, you know, liberating thing to have him say that. I mean, this wonderful artist who I respected tremendously was telling me as a 30-year-old woman to go trace somebody.
Right. And I think that's amazing advice. I mean, it's,
yeah.
I'm surprised. I'm almost kicking myself for not thinking about that, but that's really good advice.
So I stole his assignment and put it in the drawing lab book. I changed it to Da Vinci. Got to make it your own, you know.
Yeah. So what surprises you about your students?
They're so good. They are so good. My husband is my best friend, and he's a creative person as well. And he, one time, he asked me, he goes, how do you feel when you, and this was when I was teaching more live classes, he goes, how does it ever happen where the students are better than you? And I said, it happens all the time, every time, because, you know, like like I said before, I mean, my skill levels are unique to my personality and my life circumstances. And there are people that not that it's better than the other, but they're just so darn good. And he's like, well, how do you live with that? And I just kind of shrug my shoulders. I don't know. I'm just grateful that for whatever reason they're coming to my class and everything. But I think that what surprises me about my students is how wonderful they are. I mean, even people that have not drawn and who are able to sort of open that part of them, they are so good. And I'm getting to look at work all the time, all day long, that I wish I had done myself, you know, that is charming or unique or just emotive or whatever. And so that surprises, I mean, that's the most wonderful, happy surprise is just how good everybody is, you know? And they don't even know it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I told someone the other day. I said, you know, I've done illustrations for children's books, and your stuff is better than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. I mean, it's just, but she doesn't think so. She, yeah. So, well, she will.
Right. And again, better or worse is like anything; it's relative. But you know, I think sometimes the political correct idea that, you know, you shouldn't say something is better than worse kind of goes a little too far. I mean, there definitely are, you know, better artists than others, or better, you know, runners than others, or better cyclists and better cooks, you know. But again, it's all relative and all about taste. I mean, somebody who makes their, you know, their signature dish has eggs in it and you don't like eggs, well, then you're not going to think that person is, you know, a particularly good cook.
Exactly.
And so there, to me, there are hierarchies, but then it's also so relative that and then it all comes down to just accepting who you are at the moment and then doing your best to get better. If you want, you know, and if you don't feel like it, then take a break. Be gentle.
What lessons have you learned as a teacher?
Well, I learn every single class. I learn something from the students as well. You know what I mean? It's not a one-way street. So I'm learning all the time just by being able to be in a room full of creative people who are willing to set a day aside to draw and paint with me. You know what I mean? So I'm learning in that way. I've also learned, and this is sort of painful to say, but I read a little book recently. It's called Cartooning, and I can't remember the author's name. It's a new book, and he was talking about teachers. He thinks teachers are frustrated hams, and I would have to put myself in that category. And so I think that I've learned that, you know, I really like being, you know, up there and making jokes and making people laugh if I can and you know, and doing it. The other thing I learned about 3 years ago, I was teaching a class, and it was a particularly moving class in that it was kind of small, and it seemed like they appreciated it so much. It was a short class, just 3 hours. And I called my husband, and I was almost in tears. I said, honey, this is my calling. This is what I meant to do, is to help. So, I mean, this sounds so dorky, but it, you know, to help somebody get over that horrible shame of feeling like they can't draw and sending them out in the world with a pencil in their hand and not being afraid. So I've learned those things about myself, that it's my passion. I'm a ham. And then of course the day-to-day learning. So it's really a great job.
And you say that this has worked out financially for you as well. You know, you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, right now I'm spending most of my time creating content. So I'm creating content for online classes, or I'm creating content for books. And so I have two books coming out this fall. And then my husband and I just signed a contract to do a fourth book, and that's going to be on photography. So it's really more his book, but kind of in my, sort of my my philosophy of keeping things simple and fun. And there's always learning points to each exercise. But, you know, the main point is self-expression and trying to get to who you are as an artist or a photographer. So so we're working on that fourth book now. And yeah, it's always a struggle. I mean, you know, moving to Seattle is more expensive, but we're making more money. So it's all good.
That's good. Tell us about your website. And your books. So let's start with your website.
Right now it's under construction. My oldest son, who's 24, is helping me redesign it. So it'll be up within the month. So right now, if you go there, it'll just point you to my blog. And that's really where everything has always happened. I've had a blog since 2005. And at first it was kind of like pulling teeth to try to think of what to put up and everything. And then it became sort of like a friend or a habit and something that I need to do, you know? so everything happens at the blog. Right now, that's where you find online classes. There's some tutorials that I put up there that are free. There's just my silly ramblings about life. I try to keep it, you know, I mean, I have this new grandson who I absolutely adore, but, you know, I try not to inundate the readers with all these, you know, with photos of my cat or my grandson too much. Every once in a while. Mostly it's just artwork and kind of creative musings or, you know, things I'm thinking about reading. That Van Gogh book was excellent. I highly recommend it and everything. So I'm on Facebook a little bit and I have a Twitter account, but, you know, you can only do so much. And I do find I'm on the computer so much that I really try to limit my computer time as much as possible. So I try to focus my energies on the blog and then let the other things, you know, just as I have time.
And you've got a new book coming out as well.
Yes, I have Drawing and Painting Imaginary Animals, which is going to be published by Quarry Books, which is the same publisher that did Drawing Lab. And it's a color book. There's drawing exercises and then mixed media projects and exercises with that one. And it's kind of the same size and shape as the first book. And then in November, I have a book called The Art of Silliness coming out. And this is basically me bringing the online class I talked about earlier, the worksheet class, into a book form. And that's being published by Perigee Books. And it is an interactive book in the sense that, you know, I give you the assignment and then you draw right into the book. So it's a workbook style book.
You've always liked workbooks, you said.
I do.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you today, and you've shared so much of your knowledge with us, and, you know, so much laughter. And it's nice to know that there is a fairy tale ending, despite what you said.
Well, we're so blessed right now, and we're so, you know, we're just really, really grateful. When you said that about me laughing, every time I laughed, I'm thinking, oh, my son is going to tell me that I laughed too much. But, you know, you have to be who you are. So.
Exactly. So, you know, the reason why I find this so interesting is, again, because so many people get so frustrated with what they're doing and they don't step out. And what's your advice for those people? I mean, we kind of know what you're going to say, but say it anyway.
Oh, I don't even know what I'm going to say to step out. Well, remember, it's just pen and paper, or it's just paint and canvas. And it's, you know, your self-worth does not live or die on whether somebody likes your painting or drawing or not. And putting yourself out there is kind of a hard thing to do. You do set yourself up for, you know, people who don't like what you do. And, you know, it's hard, but it's like anything worthwhile. It's worth it, you know, in the end, it's worth it. So I would say just, you know, find a way that's comfortable for you. Etsy was really key for me because I was so shy about putting my stuff out there. But if I could just put it up on the internet and then, you know, kind of anonymously, it really it helped me to get over that really scary hump. So
just for those who don't know, Etsy.com is ETSY.com, and you sell your stuff there. Can you tell us a little bit about Etsy before we finish off?
Yes, it's a site that started in 2005 as a way for people to buy and sell things that were handmade. So it was kind of like eBay, but not auctions. They were more like eBay stores. And everything had to be handmade, or there was also a supplies and vintage category. And I happened to luck into knowing about it right at the beginning. And so, you know, when it's at the beginning, there aren't as many people, it's not as much competition. And so then you have a little bit more chance to shine. And so I was super lucky to be kind of there at the right place at the right time, and kind of was able to make a lot of sales and stuff, you know, before I got buried. I don't make as much of a percentage of my income on Etsy anymore, but that's because I can only do so much, and I'm putting my time into the teaching. And so I do have stuff on Etsy, but it's kind of just hanging out there. Maybe later I'll go back to that.
Well, thanks again. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And
thank you so much.
Well, we'll speak to you some other time. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Sean, so much.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
If you would like to learn how you can improve your business, go to psychotactics.com, where you can get more information on audio, video, and in ebooks. Psychotactics also has tons of very helpful free articles that will help you understand the enigma of the human brain and the psychological triggers that cause your customer to buy. Go to psychotactics.com today. You'll be amazed at what you'll find there.